Hey, Slingers, welcome to another week of the Word Slinger podcast. And we're going to ask the question today, delicate question, do your Facebook ads suck? We're going to talk about that and more with Mal Cooper. Hang around. Hey, how you doing on money? I know it's a touchy subject, but I got something that may help you out. See, I'm using an app called Acorns, and it helps me manage some investing, put some money back, get a little interest. It's kind of nice to watch my money grow. So I want to share that with you. Go to kevintomlinson.com/acorns, and you'll get some free money. See you there.
It's the Word Slinger Podcast, where story matters. Build your brand. Write your book. Redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger.
Word Slinger.
Well, I am Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger. First, I want to say thank you for coming back around after I've been gone for like the past 3 or 4 weeks. And that was not unexpected. I did tell everybody I was going to be at conferences and that sort of thing. Specifically, I was at NINC for, a week or so, a little over. And then I had to fly to Colorado. And then I had a whole bunch of other stuff that happened in between, including getting sick. Get the traveler's crud. And so I'm kind of on the mend from that. I think there's some residual stuff going on. You can hear it in my voice probably. But I had a great time at the conferences. Learned a lot. Did some pretty cool stuff. Lots of stories came out of that. And I'll probably share a few here and there. Not today, though. Not the lengthy ones. Maybe on another episode. So maybe on the 200. So we're at 199 right now. We're 199 episodes. So we got the big 200 coming up. I'm kind of excited about that. I need to find a way to make that one special. Yeah, something unique. We'll see. We'll see. So while at NINC, I got a chance to hang out with today's guest, Mal Cooper. Now, I'm just gonna preface this and say that I chatted with Mal back in February 2019, February 25th to be precise about it. This was prior to certain shifts in Mal's lifestyle, we'll say. So I do refer to her as Michael in the interview. I don't want to give offense to anybody. I know she's cool with it. So, but this was prior to the changes. So, and I don't want to put too fine a point on that. I just wanted to call it out because, if you happen to know Mal, you know that, there are things that have progressed. So, now all that aside, I know that sounded awkward. I didn't mean for any of that to sound awkward. Mal's a good friend of mine. We have known each other for years, and, I was really happy to have her on the show and to talk about, your Facebook ads suck, which there is a second edition coming out soon, I'm told. So, sorry this took so long, Mal, by the way, if you're listening, to get around to putting this up. But, you know, things happen. I pre-record these well in advance, so I've got like a year's worth of interviews in the can so that I don't have to scramble for a guest or something. Maybe it's time to rethink that policy. I want to make sure that everybody gets their exposure in a timely manner. So we'll look at it. I'm always tinkering with the show. You know how it goes. So anyway, I'm not going to keep you from this interview. We talk about Facebook ads and some other things, some really truly interesting things that I think you'll enjoy and get something out of. I hope you enjoy this episode, and stick around on the other side. Well, I'll have a few words to cap us off, and other than that, I'll see you there. Hey, thanks for tuning in to another great interview. I can't wait to do this one. I met Michael Cooper a couple of years ago now, right, Michael? At Indie Book Fest, I think. Yep. We've had lots of opportunities to chat. Occasionally, we don't see eye to eye on certain aspects of the business, which is why it's good to to chat with each other. And actually, I've learned quite a bit from you, and especially your book, which was signed to me as a I don't want to use the word, but it was signed to me to indicate that I was not a unicorn and he was not a unicorn. There was an expletive in there somewhere, but thanks for thanks for coming on the show, Michael.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
And the book I was just referencing, by the way, was Help My Facebook Ads Suck. That was the
right
one. Yeah.
Yep.
So things going pretty well with that one?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I probably need to update it, to be honest, but I think if I were to update the book, most of what I would say in it is don't pay attention to all the new shiny stuff and just do ads, you know, the way that makes sense.
Yeah.
Facebook's got so much stuff right now. They're trying to promote, you know, ways to turn images into video and all sorts of things like that. And my advice that I would probably update the book with is ignore all of that until you're really good at running regular image ads and then start experimenting with more.
I think that's good advice. And, you know, Facebook's little ad crew, they harass you over it. I don't know if you've gotten the sales pitches and the sales calls. And I did like a 30-minute walkthrough. The guy was trying to convince me to start using more video. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm all for video, but it takes more time to produce. So,
well, that, and it's, if you make a mistake, it's an expensive mistake.
Exactly. Like
if you make a video ad that just does nothing, you might have dropped a couple $100 on that and you get nothing out of it. Whereas image ads, you can pay a buck a picture.
Right. Know? Right. So I think we're putting the cart in front of the horse now, because I want to talk to you about sort of your, how you got into the business, what you're doing. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your, because you write under MD Cooper.
Right.
That's at least one pen name. Do you have other pen names?
Nope, that's it. That's all I do.
That's all you do all day, in and out. So tell me how you got into the business, man.
So, I mean, I've, like a lot of folks, I've been writing since I was a kid. For me, it started when I finished Lord of the Rings and I didn't want the story to stop. So I started writing my own stuff. I started playing around with maps and whatnot. And for me, maps and setting are where I get a lot of my ideas. So I started like copying the Lord of the Rings maps out of the books and drawing my own. And I started making my own maps and I started thinking about who would live in these places and what they would do. And that's where the story started coming from. In fact, there's a map up on my wall that you can kind of see behind me. I did that when I was 19 years old.
Wow. Still have
it. It's just one of the maps I love. It's massive. It's probably got, I want to say it's probably got about 400 or 500 cities and names and nations and all sorts of stuff all over it. And someday I'm going to, that's a fantasy world. Someday I'm going to write that story. But right now,
I was going to ask you if that was one you were already writing in, but you haven't written anything in that yet.
I haven't yet. No, but that one I will. It's, I wrote about one book when I was like 21. And of course I didn't know what I was doing back then. So it's kind of garbage. So I'd have to throw it out and start over.
Yeah.
But it's like anything, you know, a lot of practice makes perfect. And I'm pretty sure that the thing that changed me over science fiction was watching Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that you could take science fiction, you could have a lot of fun with it.
Right, yeah. And, hey, brown coat for life here, man.
That's right. So that's what got me going is that. And I put out my first, self-published my first book in 2012.
Yep.
And between 2012 and June of 2016, I put out 3 books. And since November of 2016, I've put out an additional 70 books.
Wow. That is prolific, man. That's, people say books, I'm prolific. You've run laps around me now.
I'm one of those people that when I decide to do something, I just sort of throw myself into
it. All in. Yeah. What was your career prior to writing?
I was a software developer.
Okay.
And then eventually I moved into management, and I was actually a CTO and a CIO of a couple of different companies.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're driven and you understand the whole entrepreneurial mindset.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've worked in startups and entrepreneurial businesses almost my entire life. So I'm used to that thing where like you wear lots of hats and you do whatever you have to do to make you to succeed. Because my belief is no one else is going to succeed for you. So if you want to do great things, you just got to buckle down and do them.
Yeah. So what did you bring into your author business from that world that's been very useful? Because you are doing this full time.
Yep. Yeah, I've been doing this full time now since January 1st, 2017.
Okay.
I think like for me, a lot of it was, I was one of those software developers that possessed the unknown and rare skill where I could talk to clients, salespeople, and other software developers.
Right.
Which is pretty rare and usually what caused me to end up in management, even though I kind of hated being in management.
Right.
but I feel like I have a fairly good ability to take a technical issue or something that's got a lot of specific technical detail to it and make it interesting to anybody. Mm-hmm. And I was able to do that in my career. In fact, when we would do conferences, I was like the number one booth babe. I was like the one that would always be in the booth. Like if we were doing a conference that had like a conference floor, if it was like 3 days, I would be in the booth the whole time for a whole 3 days talking to people. And I think that same skill to be able to talk about technical things and make it into a fun story and interesting for whoever I'm speaking to came out really well with writing science fiction.
Right.
Because I write hard science fiction, which is very much about the science and getting the details right. But I also do it in a way where I tell a really fun story.
Yeah.
And I almost consider myself to be more, almost like an evangelist of hard science, where it's like, I'm going to tell you this story where everything actually obeys the laws of physics or extrapolates on the known laws of physics, but then is a fun yarn as well. And is a bit like Firefly, and it's a fun space shoot 'em up story, but also, you know, doesn't make anybody cringe when they hear about certain aspects of the science that are in it.
Right. And you've been pretty successful at this so far.
I've done all right. Yeah.
A question. It's more a statement, but you have been pretty successful at this. Have you not?
I've done all right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going wide now, which I'm guessing your audience knows what that means. So my rank on Amazon
now.
I should imagine. So probably for about 2 years, I was in the top 50 science fiction authors on Amazon. I've gone down a bit now because I'm going wide, so I don't get the KU borrowers boosting me up as much as I used to. So now I'm like around 53 or so, but I figure that's pretty. And the fact I'm going wide and financially I'm doing just as well as I did before, I consider that to be pretty good too.
Yeah, that is good. All my sci-fi and fantasy books are wide. They do okay, but not great. Mm-hmm. My, because the thriller series is kind of new, I've been running in KU to kind of build it up. So I'm going to be taking those wide once I hit around 12 books.
Right.
So I'm very keen to hear your strategy on how you're making this transition and how you're making it successfully.
Well, I think one of the things that I found is really interesting. So I took my first series wide, I think it was January of 20. Yeah, it was actually just January 2018 that I did. I took a series wide called Rika. And for whatever reason, it never did that well in KU. I put out two books in KU and they almost got no KU reads. So I figured this is a great one to try taking wide. And it now vies with my flagship series for the most revenue.
Okay.
Obviously, the funny thing is it sells less. But because I'm not getting those KU reads, I'm selling these books for $4.99 and making 70% off the books, I'm actually making as much money as a series that sells almost twice as many.
Right. Yeah.
And the interesting thing is and all of this is just on Amazon. This isn't counting the wide money. Just on Amazon, this series is now actually almost beating my flagship KU series.
Oh, you're getting all those sales just on Amazon. What about the other channels?
The other channels, they bring me about $2,000 a month on this series, which is not huge, but it's sort of, the interesting thing is that my fear was that the Amazon money would all dry up, but instead the Amazon money has increased.
Right.
I feel like that is partially because I have a readership that will buy the books regardless. I think a lot of new folks starting out may not have that going for them because you don't have these readers that will already buy the books. But I've worked really hard on cultivating a readership that will buy.
Yeah.
And I've also done, part of what I've, how I've done that is I focus more on advertising to readers of authors who are not in KU as well.
Yeah.
So when I do my AMS ads and whatnot, I target non-KU authors so I can find people who will buy books versus borrow them.
Yeah. I think, my Facebook ads in particular were always aimed at, some of those were KU authors, but largely I was aiming at authors who I knew were having a success rate with the audience I was targeting and were selling, not giving things away. So even though they're in KU, I knew that they were making actual sales. So I think that's a good strategy. So you're, how about the new stuff? Are you going out when you say you're taking the series wide, do you take the entire series and go wide, or do you do a slow trickle release?
Well, I've only actually ever finished one series. Okay. So I have 23 series and they're all currently ongoing.
Yeah. That's insane, man.
Well, I guess actually I've wrapped two series up. I've wrapped two.
Okay.
So I have done some, but what I did is the one series that when book three came out, I moved the whole thing wide, and it's been wide ever since. So when a new book comes out, it's wide right off the bat.
Okay.
I've then taken my original series, The Intrepid Saga, and that is now wide. I'm taking one of the prequel series wide. And then this year I'm launching two more series, brand new series, and they're going to launch wide. They're not going to be in KU ever.
Okay.
And one of them actually is going to be a Kobo exclusive initially as well.
Really?
Yeah. And
do you get a lot of traction on Kobo?
I do as well on Kobo as I do on all the other wide retailers combined.
Oh, well, that's impressive.
Yeah.
For most people, and me included, it's always Apple.
Apple's my number three. I do better on Barnes & Noble than Apple, and I advertise to Apple, and I still don't do as well. I don't run any ads for Barnes & Noble, and they outsell Apple for me.
That is very interesting.
I know. It's like I'm living in this bizarro world.
You're almost the exact opposite of everyone else I talk to, because nobody gets sales in Barnes & Noble.
It's
non-existent.
I know. I didn't understand either. I'm like pumping money into ads on Apple. I'm like, okay, I'm barely breaking even is kind of what I worked out. Yeah. And read through eventually it'll be all right. But Barnes & Noble was actually starting to beat Apple month over month and running zero ads.
Yeah.
I actually killed my ads for Apple.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, I don't do any advertising to push anything to Apple, of course. I told you before we started, I kind of curtailed all my ads while I do a kind of baseline and figure everything out. But, I was getting a lot of Apple promotions, and then I actually had hit number one in sci-fi on Apple for a long time. And then that led exactly nowhere because the way their promotion system works, it's like big deal. That's never happened. No one even knows anymore.
Yep, exactly. I run ads for Kobo both in the UK and Canada is where I run my Kobo ads. Okay. I spend, they're both just at $5 a day ads. But I've had...
Yeah, that's smart though, because that's their biggest targets. They're not big in the US. So
you run ads for Kobo US and nothing will happen.
Right.
You know, but in Canada, I've had 2 to 3 books in the top 10 for sci-fi in Kobo Canada now for a year and a half.
Okay.
So
that's impressive.
It's working out well for me. And I'll probably actually do $1,500 on Kobo without any releases.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not huge dollars, but
no,
it's
but I mean,
nice.
It adds to the pool, and especially if it's consistent. I mean, $1,500 to $2,000, that's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that's a nice, for a lot of authors, they take that as their monthly overall. So,
I mean, it's a mortgage payment.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, I remember for a long time that I was capping at like $1,500 to $2,000 for a real long time.
Yeah.
Especially wide. And then, when things broke over big, I was really grateful for it. But I still think in my brain, I'm trained to think of $1,500 as being a nice chunk of change. So,
and I guess it is really, if you think about it, it really is.
If someone just walked up to you and handed you $1,500, you'd count that as a damn good day.
Oh, yeah. That would
be a fantastic day. Absolutely. That's all you're getting. This is all I'm giving you for the month, but that's it. You'd still celebrate, go out and buy dinner, steaks.
Oh, yeah.
Happy.
Yeah, I have a nice meal.
So, okay. And what I was hitting at there is, when you released the series wide and now you're taking them wide, you're not doing like a whole new launch, right? You're just, now you just go wide. There's no like transition for you from KU to wide?
It depends on the series. There's a couple of my series where I told the readers I'm going to finish out the thing in KU.
Okay.
So those ones are going to be in KU. Some of them probably until the middle of next year.
Right.
And then they'll make their way wide as well. But
I want to see how that works, because the strategy I'm going with, that I decided I would try, is to do 12 books in that series and then go back to the beginning and take those wide 1 month at a time. And while I continue to write 12 more books.
Right.
In that series. And the hope there is to kind of get the best of both worlds. Keep grabbing KU dollars while I also please a wider audience who are asking for the book. Some people have written pissed off that they're not able to buy those books on Kobo or whatever.
I think in some respects I am doing a similar thing, because all of my books are in the same universe.
Okay.
So these books that I am taking wide do lead into other books,
Okay.
So as... as I so really what you're doing book by book, I'm almost doing series by series,
series
in a way.
By series. Yeah, rub it in, why don't you?
Sorry. I think you still might actually be outselling me right now. You've been doing really well from what I've seen.
I've been doing very well, and I'm very pleased with how it's going. I don't know if I'm outselling anybody. I don't put myself up against anybody, but for, you know, comparing my year over year, things have been phenomenal. So I think I'm doing okay. I'm buying RVs and, but you know, we're looking at buying a house and we're looking at a whole bunch of other stuff off of book income. I never could say that back in like 2013. So
that's pretty awesome. Yeah.
So, I want to talk to you now. Well, we'll talk about anything you want to talk about, but one of the things I do want to come around on is talking about like the Facebook ads and stuff. That was one of the things that, when I initially invited you on the shows was, because that's something people get sort of flustered over, and get intimidated over. So, but you wrote a book that kind of makes it pretty simple, I think. And it's a lot cheaper than the courses that some people are charging for.
That was part of my goal. I felt like the information was basically, I think all information is out there and you can probably find it in lots of forums. So I didn't want to charge a lot of money for it, but there's also so much misinformation out there.
Right. And I kind of like the boiled down approach that you took, you know, because it's what I tell people too, essentially, because everyone always asks like what their marketing strategy should be. And I say, you know, you should pick one thing, master that one thing. And when you've mastered that, then you can add the next thing.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much.
Otherwise you could spend all day, every day, just spreading yourself across all the different things you could do and get no traction, not know what's working.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Believe me, that's what I did for the first like 5 years. And it's exhausting. So, but can you walk a little, I don't want to spoil the book for anybody, and everybody should go buy it. And by the way, everyone, links in the show notes, but what's kind of the basics of your process?
Well, I think the very first thing that drives me nuts when people talk about advertising, well, I guess a lot of it was born out of people saying it's not working when they're running ads. And so my first question was, well, how do you know it's not working?
Right.
And a lot of times you're just like, well, I'm not a millionaire the next day, you know?
Right.
So, and to varying degrees of that, but they were expecting, you know, the Red Sea to part and, you know, the Israelites to come through and whatever other great things were supposed to happen. But that's not the way advertising really works unless you have a massive budget. That you can throw at it. Mostly you got to build it up. You got to understand what's working and go slow, but you also have to understand what a sale is worth. Like I came up in software development and a lot of times it was startups. So I had a very good understanding of the effort that I was going to put in and what that was going to return for the company.
Right.
So we knew like if we brought a customer on and we knew what on average customers would buy. And then we could say, okay, well, if we put this much effort into this feature, the customers that are paying for it will actually make it profitable versus like maybe if it was this particular tier in the business and we said we put this much effort in the feature, it'll just never be profitable because the customers don't pay enough. You know, I had a very good understanding of that sort of thing. And so I looked at all these authors, I realized these authors had no idea what profit was, what it looked like for them.
Right, right.
And since most of us write in series, the main idea is, okay, if I sell a book one, what's my read through? And what's that turn into in dollars if my readers, you know, because read through will drop off. There's just no two ways about it.
Right.
Except for in certain cases, like Lee Childsham has some books now that do better than his sold more books recently than his original books have ever sold. But that's different than what a lot of authors experience.
He also has film deals with Tom Cruise and
that skews things. But by and large, you know, series read through will drop off. But you can calculate it what it's worth. And for me right now, if I sell book one of my books, it's worth about $120 in read through, which is pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Most series were with around maybe 3 to 5 books. It's only worth about $7 or $8.
Right.
If you sell book one, assuming book one's at 99 cents, if book one's more than 99 cents, it might be worth as much as $10.
Right.
So you have to say to yourself, okay, if I'm spending more than $10 to sell a book, I'm losing money, but people didn't understand that. They didn't know where their break even was. So a lot of my thing is just about understanding that first,
right?
What the sale of a book is worth. And then from there, it's really just saying now create an ad that's an image, not a video, not a carousel, nothing fancy, just an image with text and write that text like you would write a blurb is my main argument. Because I explain to people, like, this is your one chance to show people that you're an author and you can tell a story. So I my argument is that unless you're selling a deal, then if you're selling a deal, you use more traditional ad copy because you're not selling the book, you're selling the price.
Right.
But if it's a regular ad you want to keep running, you're selling the book and you're selling your skill as a writer. So I advocate very strongly that people write longer copy, and they write copy that tells a bit of a story, entice the reader, get them to click that link, get them to go to the Amazon page. The Amazon page should not be the same thing as your ad, because you want to take them through a journey. And then just work on that until you get ads that actually work well. And then you can start to experiment with video, and you can start to do fancier things and whatnot. But it's really right. about mastering that single image ad. And then my other main piece of advice is stop using your book covers. Yeah. Stop putting text in the picture.
Yeah.
And I still think like half of the author ads I see, there's text in the picture. And Amazon even says, we will show your ad to fewer people and charge you more money if you put text in the picture.
Right.
It used to be that they wouldn't show it at all. They'd be like, nope, we're not going to let you run this ad with text. And then eventually they gave in. They're like, fine, you can put text on the image. But they still say, like, we ain't showing this to anybody. We're charging more money. Yeah. And all these authors keep doing it. If I could do one thing, it would just be to convince all authors just to put pictures up and stop putting text on the picture. That's what the words above and below are for.
Yeah.
You've got all these spots where you get, because in traditional advertising, like say in a newspaper or magazine, there's no image and text section. It's all part of the image. But on Facebook, you've got specific places to put the text. So put your text there.
Yeah. That's the ads that have worked best for me. And I've started using, animated images do well, because I can do them fast.
You grab the eye,
right? And they're subtle. I don't do anything. I try not to go overboard with them, but they get attention, and they get people to check it out. I stop putting. Occasionally, I end up with a cover in an image just because I'm in a hurry or whatever.
I do that. I do a cover image when I'm putting a post up on my page, and then I boost it for all people who like all my page,
right?
Because for them, I'm letting them know, this is a book you've been waiting for. Here's the book. Like I'm reiterating to them that this is a book.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If I'm trying to grab new eyeballs, then I don't do that.
Yeah. And you're targeting, I think we discussed this already, you're targeting guys who are not in KU. But they write in your genre, right? I mean, it's not.
Yeah, like guys like John Scalzi and a lot of trad pub guys like Larry Niven and the like, you know.
Right. Those guys are getting expensive, man. I don't do sci-fi anymore, so I don't really target those guys anymore. But like the people in my bunch, Lee Child and, you know, Clive Cussler and those guys are kind of getting, they're not cheap to target anymore.
Yeah. What I recommended this, and I shot myself in the foot, but what I do is I do target a lot of golden era sci-fi authors, because people don't think to target them, and they're all available on Facebook. And I told everybody this, and then my ad cost went up a whole lot.
Yeah.
I somewhat regret doing that, but.
Well, we do that. I understand that entirely. I mean, cause that's, you know, I share everything, and I think sometimes to our detriment, we all share everything, but that's also how we figure out new ways to do things. And eventually it's not going to be a secret forever anyway. We already know this.
That's right. Yeah.
Somebody's going to figure it out. There aren't a whole lot of golden era, archaeological thriller writers. I've got Clive Cussler.
Yeah. Basically Clive Cussler.
That's pretty much it. No one's out searching for the authors that I actually think would be the perfect targets, which are the pulp fiction era guys.
Right.
No one's searching for those. And that's too bad, you know, because I think that would be perfect, but it doesn't work because I think it's perfect. It works because this is what people are looking for.
That is a really important thing, is that a lot of times you'll spend hours building the perfect ad and the perfect audience and whatnot, and you'll think this is gonna be the one that's just gonna nail it. People are gonna see this ad, they're gonna love it, they're gonna convert, and it does nothing.
Yeah.
And then some crummy one you threw up, you know, in like 5 minutes ends up being amazing.
Yeah.
And that's so much of it too. It's very hard to predict what people are gonna like.
That's true.
Which is why you just have to do a lot of it.
So I wanted to ask you, because I remember there was a time in Mark Dawson's whole course where he actually was not fond of the promoted posts, boosted posts. How do you feel about that, about the boosted posts versus ads?
I generally recommend against boosted posts. Although the reasoning for doing so has diminished. It used to be that you couldn't put a button on the boosted posts.
Now you can.
And I should double check this, but I'm pretty sure that on a boosted post, though, if you click the image, it just enlarges the image.
Okay.
It doesn't actually take you to the destination. And I think that's still the main argument against using a boosted post. Whereas you do a regular ad, they click the image, they go where you want them to go. Whereas a boosted post, it just makes the image bigger. And then you pay for that. Because on boosted posts, you pay for interactions. So you're paying for them clicking the image and just getting a bigger version of the image.
That's a good, that's a very good point.
Yeah, and I think that's still the main reason why I don't run them. But I get lazy sometimes when I just do sales and announcements and whatnot. I just put a post up and I boost it. Because in many cases, for those people, it's an awareness situation.
Right.
You know, I just want them to know the new book's out, and if they want it, they're going to go get it. You know, because so
what if that image is actually coming in from the preview of a landing page you're promoting?
I think that is the scenario where it will. Like if you don't put an image in specifically, you just put a link in and then it auto populates it, then I believe that that will take them right to it.
Okay.
But if you specifically have put in an image, then it doesn't take them there.
Yeah. That is a frustration that I've had with Facebook in general. Is that a lot of posts that I put up, I'd rather your click go to a page, even if I'm not promoting it. Like sometimes I'm just sharing the image because the preview didn't pull that image.
Right.
So it's very frustrating to try to share something and then, you know.
On the downside though, is if you do the thing where it pulls in the preview, Facebook shows those to less people.
Okay.
I wonder so why. That's the thing, like where you put an Amazon link, it's got the book and then the blurb and whatnot. It'll show those to fewer people than it shows just a straight image to.
It's interesting. Why do you think that is?
I've only done this anecdotally. I've done some tests where I did some side-by-side comparisons of different things, and I found that the straight-up images got shown to more people. I'm guessing it's just part of their logic that they think people like images more than previews.
All right. It goes against, you know, like 100 years of advertising knowledge. But
well, Facebook's thing is that Facebook doesn't want posts to look like ads.
Yeah.
Because right now they've hit ad saturation and they have to make it so as much of the advertising content looks like regular posts as possible.
Right.
And I think that possibly incorrectly drives too much of the way they do things.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think that many cases showing somewhere up front that you're advertising a book is a good idea. But on Facebook, if you show a picture of a book, they'll show it to fewer people, so you can't show a book.
Right.
Whereas other advertising mediums, I would absolutely show a cover of the book cover. But on Facebook, it hurts you because of just the way they price and show the content.
So when you're running ads on Facebook, is your goal more sales or list building, or you know, what's your sort of motive?
I don't believe in using Facebook for list building. I think it's
See, this is where you and I. We talked about this at Indie Book Fest, and this is where you and I were at odds. One of the rare things that you and I don't agree on.
Well,
I got my reasons.
It just comes down to cost per lead.
Yeah.
You know, when you're probably going to spend about 15 cents to 30 cents per email address if you're using Facebook ads to get email addresses. And when I do multi-author promotions or I work with groups like Sci-Fi Bridge or whatnot, I'm paying 1 to 2 cents per email address.
Right.
So it's like it's between 7 and 15 times more expensive to use ads to get those email addresses.
Right. But then we're not going to go into that.
You can make an argument that the email addresses are less valuable because they're shared with more people and whatnot.
Yeah. My whole goal in list building is always to, you know, it really comes back to that. I forget how you defined it, but the, you know, how much is that reader worth? Like over lifetime. And I feel like I can qualify leads better with Facebook ads that are meant to get them on a list rather than sell to them directly.
I do feel like your genre is different too, because I don't feel like you have a lot of low-cost alternatives to get these email addresses.
That's true. And my tack for sci-fi was different than this.
Yeah. Like so, in sci-fi, there are dozens of groups that are running these multi-author promotions and whatnot and giveaways and all sorts of things that can get you lots of email addresses. I don't think there's as much of that in thriller, is there?
We'll do some of that. There are a few of us that band together and do that, but because we have so much crossover already, it's almost not worthwhile.
Yeah, if it's the same people, you're not getting anything out of it.
It's pretty much the same folks, right.
But I could probably do every week, I could probably do one with entirely or largely different people in science fiction.
Yeah, yeah. See, I can totally see that. There's a, we're a smaller group. So yeah. See, that's interesting. And that's something we don't talk about much, is that there are differences in the genres, and romance has its advantages over all the genres, and sci-fi has its advantages over most of the genres.
Thriller's got some interesting advantages too, because thriller, you can write things in a non-serial series and still do really well. And you guys can price higher. You know, science, if you look at trad pub science fiction now, they're having to price down to $4.99, $5.99
right,
in a lot of cases.
Yeah, whereas I took a lot of flack for my sci-fi stuff because it was serialized, right?
Right.
Because of the way it was serialized. And I don't get any complaints about it now. So
it is very different though. Well, I was talking to some people about they were sort of decrying the idea of tropes. I'm like, no, you have to give people tropes. You know, if you go to when you go to buy a burger at a restaurant, you expect that burger to be a certain way. If you get a burger and there's a banana in it, you're not going to be happy. You know,
right?
You want cheese, not a banana. And it's the same thing with the audiences. You know, they're looking for a certain type of story, and if you don't give it to them, you have a problem. So that's a big thing. And different genres specifically cater to different tropes.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, like, now you're talking about writing to market, Michael.
I guess so. Yeah.
Nobody likes writing to market.
I never think about it as writing to market, though. I just think about it as like telling the story that people want to hear.
Yeah. Meeting expectations is not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
When you're in any business. But writers in particular, and if you think that those guys, the Golden Age guys you're talking about, if you think that they were not writing to market, they were absolutely writing to market.
Yeah, and they had the magazine system to know if it was working or not.
Exactly, you know? Right.
But it'd be like, you know, if you went to an Italian restaurant and they started serving you Mexican food.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be like, what the heck is this? I came here for Italian. I came here for fettuccine and you're giving me a taco, you know?
Stop stifling my creativity.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. It's like, yes, the cook might want to make whatever he wants, but he can't. He's
right,
an Italian restaurant. He has to make Italian.
He has to open another restaurant. And then
Pen names. Everything comes back to food is how the world works.
If you want me to understand anything, you need to explain it to me in terms of food.
It's pretty much.
If you want me to understand the value of a reader, how many chicken wings can I buy with each reader? That's what I need to know.
That's right. I like that. Convert
readers Kevin's into chicken wing philosophy of income. And
this reader is a whole KFC family size.
I'll see. I haven't had lunch, man. Now I gotta wrap this up, and I gotta head for a KFC now. So we're at time, which is actually really unfortunate because I always enjoy talking to you, and I feel like when we're at conferences, we kind of get pulled in different directions, but we always somehow end up with that moment where we get to sit around with a couple of drinks and
we do
each other. So that's good. Are you going to be at Indie Book Fest this year?
Yeah, I'll be at. I'm going to Indie Book Fest. I'm going to Space Coast, which is a month before Indie Book Fest.
Okay.
And that's actually out of at Cape Canaveral, so that's gonna be pretty cool.
Yeah,
like the hotel is like you can see the launch pads from the hotel
type of thing. And we haven't decided. Dan and I need to talk. We've been kind of shuffling conference duties a little. I think I'm going to be at both Indie Book Fest and NINC again.
Yeah, I'll be at NINC this year. I'm finally going.
Oh, good. You're gonna. That's a very different conference.
Well, Diane Capri has been trying to get me to go there for some time, and I finally decided that. My argument against being a member of NINC was like all the benefits I felt that I got from CIFWA, but I've decided that CIFWA doesn't give me any benefits. So,
I'm not going to trash.
You don't say that too loud, but
CIFWA. But I got to say that I was kind of disappointed, but whatever. That CIFWA does offer some great advantages to its members.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people can get a lot of things out of it. There just wasn't a lot for me to get out of it. So,
yeah. That's the way I felt too. And I am a CIFWA member, and I maybe I need to go and look closer. Maybe there's some stuff I'm missing. I don't know.
It could be, yeah.
NINC NINC's a pretty big conference, and it's everyone who shows up there is they're not trying to get into publishing. They are successfully publishing.
So, that's the thing. I think this. I feel at a lot of and I don't mind doing this because I'm speaking at a lot of conferences this year. Mm-hmm. I like giving back and trying to help people and get a leg up, but I feel like I need to go somewhere where I can do that or I can be a sponge and
exactly. Something. Yeah. Cause that's what, I hit like 10 or 12 of these things a year and they're almost always about me helping the authors. This one is one that even though I am there as I'm typically there as a
vendor.
Yeah.
I get more out of that conference and the San Francisco Writers Conference the same way.
Oh, cool.
I feel like that's a good one too. So if you're looking for another one to add, it skews very traditional, and it does have its sort of entry level folks looking for agents and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The tracks there have been really good.
I'm doing the New England Speculative Fiction Writers Conference in April as well.
Okay.
That's Portland, Maine. And then I'm also doing one called Inkers Con in Dallas at the beginning of May.
In Dallas. I should try to go to that.
I forget who runs it now. It's actually a fairly big group of romance authors that run it. And they actually invited me to come and talk about ads and stuff.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
All right.
So it'll be like completely out of my, I'll be like the only science fiction author in the entire place, but
maybe, but it's getting to where there's not as much of a distinction anymore, you know, cause there's romance writers they're starting to own other genres.
They are. Yeah. Well, I'm actually working on a sci-fi romance book right now. So I'm trying to go the other way.
I'm not going to reveal who it was. I just recently interviewed a romance thriller writer, and, I'm like, if you guys take over these genres, like none of the rest of us are going to have any hope.
Yeah, we're not. Well, I feel like science fiction is one that's hard to, like, at least the hard military science fiction is a lot harder to break into because you have to know all of the actual real world rules behind these things.
Yeah.
You know, you want to write military science fiction, you start having Marines call the staff sergeant staff, you're going to run into a problem.
Yeah.
You know, he has to be staff sergeant. If it's Army, he can be staff, but if they're Marines, he has to be staff sergeant. You know, there's like all these little tiny rules that are everywhere.
Yeah. These are things that you really need to know this stuff.
Yeah. And for the type of science fiction I write, if you don't know the maximum effective length range of a laser beam in space, you'll have problems because it's not infinite. The beam will break apart and you lose beam cohesion. So at a certain range, it doesn't damage anymore.
Yeah. I mean, thrillers have that. I mean, people get on me if I get a fact of history wrong.
That's true. Yeah.
I put the wrong type of grass in Central America near the site of the tomb that I explored in Mayan tomb. That type of grass grows much further south. I know this now.
There you go. You're right. There is stuff like that everywhere. I do feel like certain genres, and maybe not. And actually, I've talked to some thriller authors, and they're like, I had to like learn how quickly a body decomposes under these specific conditions and stuff like that.
That's the stuff that makes this fun for me. Learning this stuff is probably half the reason I started writing in the first place. So
when I was doing software. I think this is the same sort of idea. It's like we always talked about, like in software, there's really no way to stop someone else from copying you in this day and age. You can't patent software very well.
Right.
If you were to patent software, by the time it's patented, it's obsolete.
Right.
So you always have to worry that someone else is going to eat your lunch. Right. And what I would always argue is that the only thing you can do to stay ahead is quality. You can build a new product overnight, but you can't build a quality product overnight. And I feel like that's the same thing with writing too, is that you can, anybody can write a story, but can anyone write a quality story? And that maybe isn't just the prose. That's, you know, your research and how well you understand storytelling in the world and everything like that too. So that's what my main focus is to tell a story that's has good prose, really good science, and is internally consistent. Mm-hmm. Cause that's the thing that drives me nuts about science fiction, when it's not internally consistent.
Yeah.
One time it took 4 days to get there. The next time it took 2 days to get there. It's like,
yeah, that stuff bugs me too. I thought just for our call, I remembered that I'd written something into today's scenes that contradicts something I'd written the day before. And so now it's going to bug me until I sit back down this afternoon and get back to it.
Yeah,
I got to go fix it.
Don't forget.
Well, it's a literal night and day thing. Like I have two characters interacting remotely in two different scenes. One of them is the middle of the night, and the other one is the middle of the day. So that's a problem.
They're on the other side of the world.
They're not on the other side of the world. They're only in two different time zones in the U.S.
Oh, yeah. Then you got a problem.
It was a dumb mistake.
Yeah.
But see, I'm catching it now. I recognized it now. That's the point.
That's far better than a reader saying, reader, by the way.
Hey, dumbass.
Yeah, when it's noon in Boston, it is not nighttime in San Francisco.
Right. All right. Hey, man. I've really enjoyed talking to you. We'll talk again, IRL, as the kids say. Yeah, we've already determined that you and I are old timers.
That's right.
In the middle of the day and that sort of thing. So where can people find you and your mini series?
The main place is aeon14.com. It's aeon14.com. And also, if you just go on Facebook and you just search for Aeon14 fans, you'll find the fan group, which is where a lot of the fans hang out and we talk story and science fiction there. The fans, actually, my group, they post way more than I do. They probably post like 5 to 10 times a day.
Yeah.
So it's a really active group talking about a lot of fun stuff all the time.
I really need to cultivate that. But a lot of my fans are, you know, old timers. Like,
mine are too. I would say the average age of my fans is about 50 to 60 years old.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, that's funny. That's funny.
I honestly just think it's because they have more time on their hands.
Well, that could be. I think I'm going to start encouraging that because I don't really push that. But I think it would be fun to have. I just didn't want to manage it.
once you get it going, it takes on a life of its own, which is what mine is. I've ever had to remove 3 posts. And I've never had to kick anyone out of the group, so I think it runs pretty well.
All right. I will take a look at that. I'll get a little closer to that. I think that'd be great. All right. So everybody else, thank you for sticking around. I hope you enjoyed this interview. And we're sure to have some stuff going on after this, so stick around for that. Right now, you're probably hearing the groovy theme music. You may dance in place at will, and we'll see you on the other side. Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mal Cooper, and I hope you got something useful to help in your Facebook ad campaigns and the way you're marketing your books. You know, marketing our work is the number one question. Whenever I do webinars and ask me anything, and when I talk at conferences, that's the thing on everybody's mind. How do I market the work? Meaning, how do I find readers to buy this stuff? You know, you put your heart and soul into these books, and it's challenging to find a way to get readers to discover it. I have a lot of theories on ways that can enhance that and make it a little easier, but nobody so far, no one in my circles at least, has come up with any kind of magic formula that makes it happen just on demand every time. But there's a lot of really cool and interesting things going on with ad platforms right now. Facebook is one. Amazon Marketing Services, or whatever they're calling it now, it's still referred to, I think, as AMS. That is another way that you can reach readers directly on the Amazon platform. Something that I've been playing around with a lot lately is BookBub ads. I've been I talked with David Gochran and Ernest Dempsey, Wallet and Ink. And they really convinced me to dive in. Some of you may know, I actually have avoided, I think I even mentioned this in the interview, I have avoided advertising for quite some time, mostly just trying to figure out the organic side of how to promote my business. How do I get readers to just naturally discover the work? That's always been very important to me, because I want to be able to answer that question for people who have no advertising budgets. You know, if you don't have money, you can't pay for ads. So I wanted to be able to talk to people on that level. I think I've, found some tricks to do that, mostly in the form of content marketing. Building up your mailing list is paramount. These are things you've probably heard. You've heard this stuff before. So I'm not going to go into too much detail about it just yet. But I have talked about it in past episodes. I'll talk about it in future episodes. But the BookBub ads platform is pretty incredible. It's a fairly simple and straightforward way to do advertising, but it's robust in its reach, which is really interesting because you're advertising to folks who are subscribers to the service. They get the newsletters. It's on their site. It's in the newsletters, and there are all kinds of tricks for getting yourself in front of these folks. So. Looking very closely at that, as I learn, you will learn. I'll tell you everything that I discover as I go. So just give me some time. And I know there's always some impatience. But I do recommend reading David Gochran's BookBub Ads book. What is the title, the exact title? Here, I'm looking on my phone now so that I can give you an exact title. It is BookBub Ads Expert.
by David Cochran. And yeah, definitely check that out. I'm learning a lot from that. You can also learn a lot from his blog. His is not the only approach. Ernest Dempsey's approach is very different. And Dempsey doesn't have anything official out yet. Maybe I should bring him on the show and talk to him about BookBub ads. What do you think of that? It'd be fun to have Ernie back on the show. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to reach out to him right after this. So beyond that, I am, if you are attending conferences, I am going to be at 20 Books Vegas in November. So I think that's November 11th, I think, at Sam's Town Casino in Vegas. Great conference. I'm going to be talking about bootstrapping your author career, which you've heard me talk about on this show in the past. In fact, that's why I'm talking about it. After I did that episode, Michael Anderle approached me about talking about that very topic at 20 Books. So very much looking forward to that experience and to, you know, sharing what I my insights. I owe them a presentation, which is sitting on my desktop right now. Well, what can I say? I do like 100 presentations a year now. Sometimes I like to relax a little. But anyway, I'm gonna get that finished up probably today. Get it to them. If you're gonna be at that conference, definitely come in, check out the panel. I will also be. Well, I think that's pretty much my last conference for the year. I think. I'll still be traveling some. Got some interesting stuff coming up. I've talked to you guys about us getting on the road full time. Lots of interesting things happening in preparation for that. So that will all be a future episode or two or three or several. Who knows? But anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you got something amazing out of this episode. I hope I'm inspiring, informing, educating, and entertaining you. Those are my four pillars, the four mission pillars of my business here. I hope you're getting that kind of blessing out of the show. I know there's been a gap. There will be gaps in this time of year, especially conferences and holidays. But I'm going to try to pop in as often as I can, and I'm going to try to get that 200th episode in before the end of the year for sure. So I'm looking forward to that. So stick around, stay tuned, swing back by. God bless you. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and have a wonderful week ahead. And I'll see all of you next time.
Wordslinger.